Welcome to the AI on Action podcast, the show where we break down the hype and highlight the practical benefits of data science, machine learning, and artificial intelligence on our everyday lives. Subscribe to the podcast, check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, or any Android podcast of choice. Welcome to the AI in Action podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kelly. Today's guest is Brian McKelligus. Brian is a partner at the intellectual property sector of Mason Hayes & Curran, specializing in transactional and commercial IP. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks very much, Mark, and thanks for having me.
Brian, tell us a little bit about Mason Hayes & Curran for people that don't know about your company, and also tell us a little bit more about innovation and why that's actually so important in the legal sector.
Absolutely. Well, many people probably do know us. We are an open and collaborative law firm with internationally renowned intellectual property and technology practices. We act for a range of clients, from appearing for Facebook before the Court of Justice of the European Union recently in the Schrems matter, and that was regarding the validity of model clauses, right down to assisting tech startups with the most basic of advices regarding IP protections and commercialization and employment issues, corporate, you name it, we will do it. Take, for example, our approach to emerging areas of law, such as AI, robotics, digital health, and autonomous vehicles. We want to be in a position to engage collaboratively with our clients on new and challenging issues in these sectors. So, apart from advising clients directly on specific issues they face, we have also set up two internal groups where we collaborate across the practice, both vertically and horizontally, for education and content creation purposes, for both internal and external use. We want to anticipate the next issues before they are even on our clients' radars. As part of this drive, we are also engaging with organisations like AI Ireland and the AI Alliance at an EU level to take part in the initiatives tackling the multitude of legal and regulatory issues being thrown up by the use of AI. And these include things like privacy, bias, ethics, accountability, explainability, and transparency. We're also embracing innovation in how we communicate with clients and potential clients. Surveys that we are shown consistently show that face-to-face interaction is the optimum means for client communication, with voice and email communication trailing. We are looking at doing the next best thing, and that is some targeted podcasts in the area of tech law, with the goal of giving our clients, and particularly time-poor in-house counsel, an alternative means for exploring new issues and catching up generally on legal developments in their area. We are all so much busier that even high-end continuing professional development events, which is something that all lawyers need to do, can be a stretch for some busy in-house counsel. We want to give them a quick and convenient means for staying in touch with pressing legal technical issues. Innovation is also important from a practical and practice perspective. It's abundantly clear from trends in other industries, as well as our own, that process automation, natural language processing, and machine learning are already changing how we work and will in time embed more deeply in our business. From our perspective, we currently use predictive analysis in certain aspects of our business and have a legal and technical group constantly scanning the market for the next tool that will be suitable for our business and clients. Despite hype and elements of scaremongering, most lawyers are receptive to change that's being brought about by the likes of NLP and ML. However, I suppose you would probably comment that it's the pace of the change that's the more contentious piece. Adoption can be slow.
Tell us about some of the innovation that you're seeing either in the legal sector or from companies that you're working with. What I'm pretty impressed by MHC is that you're actually kind of eating your own dog food in terms of trying some of these things out. You mentioned an interesting point there that we all are time poor, and you're trying to be smarter about sharing information and data. And even that's doing the podcast where people are driving to work and they can now listen to updates and new regulation, for example, while they're multitasking, or even if they're putting some food on, they can have something in the background. Any interesting companies that come to mind?
Well, I suppose first of all, I'd say that here in MHC, we have a thriving trademark and filing prosecution practice. And this leads to some areas we're looking into using further tech. We manage some of Ireland's best known and loved brands for our clients. In the legal market, this work will be considered on the commodity end of the scale, and so it's kind of ripe for further automation. This is particularly the case regarding something trademark clearance searches, such as market searches performed before launching a new brand to seek to avoid the nasty surprise of having to withdraw a product at or before launch because it is infringing the IP rights of a third party. So in the context of that sort of work, what we do is we do searches for our clients to allow them to launch the product without there being an issue or to manage the risk before it arises. These searches are conducted by third-party software owners, which trawl official international trademark databases using tailored complex algorithms for the purpose of returning results of trademarks the same as or identical to your target mark or your new product name. The results are then analysed by a trademark expert on our team for the purposes of producing a client-friendly report on the risks of proceeding or not with the launch of the product or the new name. Now, since I first did this work well over 10 years ago, the landscape has changed quite a lot. The algorithms are more sophisticated and produce better and more targeted results. And up until recently, logo searches weren't available, but they are now quite widely available. And this is thanks to things like image recognition technology. The results are quicker and the costs have reduced also. Trademark Now is a good example of a company doing interesting things in this sector. I suppose, from our own perspective, it's possible to conceive of a reduced role for the practitioner in this work in the not too distant future. But in that sense, I think it's important to bear in mind that then our expertise will move more into the area of targeted analysis and exploitation strategies, and we will help our clients in that way. For the moment, I think the key barrier to the broad rollout of this tech is price. Unless you are a very large international brand owner, you will not be taking an in-house license of this technology very soon.
I think it's interesting you mentioned about commodity and then being very mindful of what's commodity, what isn't, what can you allow people to do kind of higher value task and then specialize in, but also knowing the importance of just continuing the tasks that you're currently doing. There usually is a high cost to enabling some of this innovative technology, and you want it to drop down, but sometimes just the juice isn't worth the squeeze in terms of what you invest in it, unless you're very mindful for the future because you're trying to change the culture within the organization by driving through some of these innovations as well. And can you tell me a little bit about the productivity innovations, like an example where somebody would be listening now and thinking, okay, what difference is that going to make to my bottom line, either my ROI or maybe being more efficient, or anything that somebody could take action on today?
I think my understanding at the moment, and from speaking to colleagues who work in-house with companies or in the public sector, is that not many of them are actually using legal tech or AI on a day-to-day basis to assist them with their workload, and it's because of those reasons you've just given. Most people in the industry, be they in-house or in public sector or private practice, are always keen to reduce administration, boost resources, and increase automation, but significant changes are slow. Not small changes, but significant changes are slow. The pace of adoption is generally down to costs, as you've pointed out, and the step change involved with the innovation. Sometimes it can be difficult to convince a business to adopt a tool which is focused on the legal side of the house. Process automation, I think, begins on the sales end of the house always, which is very understandable. So on the legal end, it might be tricky to sell that internally. Having said that, there are a number of examples of us and other firms using soft AI or process automation tools in document management, such as iManage and eDiscovery, which are very effective and cut down massively on admin. They're also more accurate and consistent than traditional reviews conducted by junior lawyers.
Is for people that haven't come across eDiscovery, would they be the case of where you'd be trawling through different files to try to find a similar case or something that's happened in the past, and then you can do specific searches through keywords that will generate different type of legal similarities or legal documents?
That's exactly it. During the process of what's known as discovery in the context of litigation, the parties are obliged to hand over certain agreed categories of documents to allow them to either prove their case, disprove the other party's case, or to try and find what most people are looking for is never or rarely there, some sort of a smoking gun. But you can imagine that, you know, when discovery was originally, I suppose, conceived, it was in relation to paper documents, and they were probably relatively easy to look through. But now you have millions of documents being generated by companies, and that process is no longer anyway feasible unless what you have is some sort of an agreed approach, which this comes down to things like keywords. So the parties will agree what keywords are to be searched, and then they will run the software across the agreed, I suppose, databases to return the results, which will then be further reviewed by the eDiscovery or indeed by a human.
So Mason Hayes and Curran, it's very good to see that you're at the EU level in terms of involvement, obviously get involved with AI Ireland and becoming a very important sponsor for the AI Awards. Tell us a little bit about the recent publication that you did in terms of educating the marketplace with some of the document that you had. And I actually reading through, it's actually pretty easy to read through, and there were some good takeaways. And maybe for people that haven't read it yet, maybe what would be some of the key points that you probably worth sharing?
That's great, and I'm delighted to hear that you had a read and that you found it easy to read. We always endeavour, I suppose, to pitch our articles to in-house lawyers and people in businesses who are interested in this area, and try to stray away from any overly legalistic approach. We created our guide to AI from a legal perspective because of the interest, I suppose, that clients show in the area and the really, really interesting things happening at an EU level. We looked at some aspects from privacy perspective and in relation to medical health apps, and also on, you know, the possibility that can machines grow so intelligent that there's the possibility that they will create and own copyright in their own IP. These are all issues being discussed, I suppose, broadly in the AI community from a legal perspective, and they make for, from my perspective anyway, a fascinating reading and very engaging topics.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I sat on a panel recently, and you were talking about, you know, having kind of avatars or having these kind of robots that would be working with humans. And what happens if that robot accidentally hurts somebody, or in some cases, really, really fatally hurts somebody? Does the robot go to prison, or does the AI entity go to prison, or is there an element that the owner of the person goes to prison? Who actually owns that? Now, again, that's a very extreme kind of example that's easy to bring up, kind of a Terminator terminology, but you will start to get these questions in terms of, you know, did AI create that algorithm? Should they get the Nobel Peace Prize? Is all these different kind of questions too, off topic. So it's something to definitely consider for the future.
It is, and that whole issue of agency or the possibility of the technology itself having some form of rights has been looked at to an extent at an EU level. There was a proposal on civil law and robotics in 2016 from the Commission, where they just threw that out as a kind of a query generally to the masses to say, you know, should we need to be looking at this concept of personality for the robots at some point in the future? I think they were quickly shot down by a whole bunch of legal academics and people in practice as well, who just pointed out some very basic flaws with regard to that approach, and that, you know, perhaps it's something that could be returned to in the future, but for the moment I think that one's off the card.
And final question, what advances are being made in regulation of AI in the EU, and where do you see the kind of current and future practices kind of going down?
I think what's happening in the regulatory sphere in the EU right now is very interesting, and about to get more interesting when the incoming European Commission President takes office on the 31st of October, which is also Brexit date. As of today, the key existing legislation that affects the use of AI in the market would most likely be down to things like intellectual property, privacy, and consumer law. There's generally a reasonable level of awareness of consumer law and privacy, with a significant media attention surrounding each, and in particular GDPR last year, maybe less so when it comes to IP. However, IP is particularly important when it comes to protecting and exploiting much of the software and the databases that are the expression of the ideas and procedures behind many AI platforms. There's also a recent program at an EU level tackling the evolution of regulations and law in the AI sector. A high-level expert group of 52 experts from legal, civil, business, and ethics-based backgrounds was assembled in June 2018 for the purpose of investigating an ethical approach to the regulation of AI in the EU. Ireland is well represented on this group, with UCC's Professor Barry O'Sullivan being the vice chair. Since then, this high-level expert group has delivered two key papers, the first on ethics guidelines for artificial intelligence, and the second in June of this year on policy and investment recommendations. Now, some have been, I suppose, slightly dismissive of the real impact of this work as it is growing from an ethics base rather than a hard regulatory base. But I think that approach fails to recognise the direction and ultimate destination of this project. Things that they're looking at in the recommendations include liability and accountability rules, consumer law protections, data law protection rules, and whether they need to be updated even in light of GDPR, issues with discrimination, and indeed things like competition rules. And I think people who have read the headlines from The Economist and others down through the recent years about data being the new oil might understand what's happening there. I suppose the potential outcomes and next steps from these issues are far-reaching, and the policy recommendations should not be taken lightly. This initiative is backed up by a recent statement from the incoming EU Commission President, who says she is going to introduce legislation on the human and ethical implications of artificial intelligence within 100 days of taking office. So, you know, we can expect something from the EU on the regulation side on AI sometime in the new year, which is, you know, they're moving at quite a quick pace. And I think anyone with a serious interest in AI development and commercialization needs to be investing a little bit of time in tracking what these guys are doing and seeing what their approach is.
Brian, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks very much, Mark. Really enjoyed it.
Now in its second year, AI Ireland, in collaboration with principal sponsor Microsoft, present the AI Awards. Come join us at the Gibson Hotel on the 20th of November 2019 and see the best that Ireland has to offer in AI and data science. To find out more, head over to www.aiawards.ie/tickets. That's www.aiawards.ie/tickets. Please feel free to reach out to me at mark@aiawards.ie.